We are back on Dateline Washington. This is the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is James Robbins, senior editorial writer for the Washington Times. For Wednesday's edition of the paper, he authored When Barack Met Bibi, in reference to this week's first face-to-face meeting between President Obama and, once again, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And Jim, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure, Greg.
As you point out in the article, the two leaders agreed that the two premier issues between the two countries right now are stopping Iran's nuclear program from getting to a point where they can deploy nuclear weapons, as well as jumpstarting a meaningful Middle East peace process. It seemed from their public comments that they had the priority reversed. Obama thought that it'd be easier to deal with Iran by jumpstarting the peace process, and Netanyahu made it clear that he thought Iran was the more immediate concern. How important is that distinction?
Well, I think it's a very important distinction because the Iran issue is on a pretty solid clock, which is ticking. And there's a definite end point to where that'll end with the development of a nuclear weapon. The Palestinian peace process is kind of a limitless, boundless issue that's been going on for decades. So to say that progress on the Iran issue is going to be contingent on this kind of vague peace process issue really has it backwards. It is much less likely that there's going to be a resolution of the Palestinian-Israeli issue anytime soon, whereas it is increasingly likely that Iran is going to develop a nuclear capability, and most experts say within a year or so. So if you make the Palestinian issue the driver of this regional settlement, you're probably not going to get there before the Iranians make the other issue overcome by events.
Jim, in terms of the clock, you spoke with a senior Israeli official, as you point out in the beginning of your editorial today, who gave you a pretty defined timetable on when a nuclear weapon could be deployable, or at least when potential action would be necessary.
Well, yes, the Obama administration first said that they were going to have a sort of an end-of-the-year timetable, but then I think at the urging of the Israeli leadership, they kind of tracked that back to late summer, maybe early fall, because, again, by the end of the year, you're really pushing up against the limits of what most experts say is when Iran can develop their nuclear weapon. So I think that the administration sort of ramped it back a little bit at Israeli urging. At least that was the impression that I got.
What do we learn today from this apparently successful missile test, missiles that could potentially reach Israel if aimed there, about where they are in this process and obviously their intentions to use these things?
Well, I think it's, well, A, it shows Iran is continuing to pursue this capability, but the timing of it really is the important question, because with this critical summit meeting going on in Washington, with the president about to go to Cairo June 4th when he's going to make a major address in the region, the Iranians are sending a signal that they won't be intimidated, that they don't care that we're talking about sanctions or other types of actions against them, that they're going to continue on with what they think is in their national security interest, which is to develop these weapons. So I think that the missile test today was an answer to the statements that came out earlier in the week from the president and from Prime Minister Netanyahu about what their priorities are.
If they were to decide to launch a weapon of that sort at Israel, would you think it would be through the missile process, or would they hand it off to one of their proxy groups like Hezbollah?
It could be a variety of things. I think that the Iranians probably wouldn't limit themselves to any one type of delivery system. I think they would probably try to use everything at their disposal, aircraft, ships, terrorists with, you know, backpack nukes, whatever it came down to. The head of the Iranian army recently said that even with their current capabilities, it would take them about 11 days to destroy Israel. So, you know, again, that's not the kind of thing you say when you're looking for conciliation.
Well, in terms of politics making strange bedfellows, sometimes diplomacy does as well, because you also point out in your piece that Arab states, which have for decades refused to recognize Israel, becoming warmer to the idea of working with them and recognizing them potentially down the road, because they don't like the idea of a nuclear-armed Iran any more than the Israelis do. Why are some of those Arab states so worried about it?
Well, you know, people in the United States don't always understand the complexities of that region, but, you know, the Arab Sunni states see the Persian Shiite state of Iran as a major threat. And the King of Jordan, for example, has talked about a Shiite crescent going from Tehran all the way over to Damascus, Syria, and into Lebanon through Hezbollah, of these destabilizing Shiite revolutionaries who want to upset things in the Middle East. And so this is very threatening to their status quo. And suddenly Israel, which is believed to have nuclear weapons and which really is not a threat to them, suddenly seems a lot more attractive partner as a counterweight to this growing threat from the Iranians, who have publicly stated that they want to take over certain Sunni lands and have the leadership role in the Muslim world, which the Sunni Arabs definitely don't want them to have. And it's amazing that this existential threat to the Sunni Arab domination of that part of the region is suddenly pushing them towards Israel. It shows that power politics can overcome historic prejudice.
And unintentionally, then, that could actually help to accelerate the peace process, right?
Oh, definitely. I think that the Sunni Arab states want to get the Palestinian issue off the table as quickly as possible so it's not in the way of dealing with the Iranian issue. I don't think it's going to be gotten rid of very quickly because Iran is now backing the Hamas movement. And I think any time that the Israelis get close to a peace with the more moderate factions of Palestinians, Hamas will just start attacking Israel again, and then Hezbollah can attack Israel from the north, which is another Iranian fully funded operation. So the Iranians really have it sewed. This is why the Palestinian peace process cannot be the driver of this thing.
About a minute left here, Jim. You say towards the end of your piece that the Obama administration has yet to spell out a comprehensive approach to Iran other than to say all options are on the table. What does Obama need to do, or at least appear that he's willing to do, in order to make sure that he has the Iranians' attention?
I think that he has to start more specifically, talk more specifically about what those options are that are on the table. I mean, just to say options are on the table, it could mean anything. But be very specific about the types of sanctions that will be imposed, the types of military options that are available, and really sort of ratchet up the, not necessarily the threat level, but the ability of the Iranians to weigh exactly what they're facing. They're not going to be compelled by some abstract. It has to be very specific for them so they can weigh the costs and benefits. And I think that'll produce more movement than just kind of saying, we hope that someday you'll reach out to us.
Well, 7 months is certainly a contracted timetable. We'll see how the administration gets more specific, if it does at all. Jim, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg.
James Robbins is a senior editorial writer for The Washington Times. This is Dateline Washington.